Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I am your pop culture and sports nerd, Mr. Ali.
My name is Ali A. Alomi, your classic nerd. V.
And I'm V, I'm your comic book nerd.
You overemphasize your H's in the...
I do that on purpose.
Hello for some reason.
Hello.
It's a H.
Why do you always pause before saying V? Like, it's like you forget
to... Well, I assume that he's just going to take off after I'm done.
But see, like, notice...
But he waits for me to say V.
And I always say Ali before you
go. It's just my natural inclination that we all just go.
No, I also... The thing is, though, I start every podcast with a nap. So I expect him to wake me up, jostle me with the by saying V.
Fair enough. Does my voice make you sleepy? Do I make you wander off into like nice dreams, lucid dreaming? Is that a thing? Lucid
dreaming? No. You remind me of how bad the public education system is.
Well, that's
fair enough.
Fair. Yeah.
In fairness, he's from Virginia.
I don't know.
What does that mean?
The public education system in Virginia
is not bad.
You guys still have Confederate monuments.
That's
name a South. Place in California that's got Confederate monuments.
Yeah, okay, California didn't fight for the Confederates, motherfucker.
He learned that in a history textbook.
Yeah. Y'all fought for the Union. I knew this.
Actually, I'm not
going to.
But we do have our edifices.
Y'all didn't fight for the Union?
To a fucked up past.
And y'all fought for the
that's
Union.
That's true. The missions. San Juan missions, yeah.
Bitch. Well, we got them too. We got plantations and shit. That's
what we saying. Still have missions, right? We have one really close by here.
Yeah. Mission.
San Juan Capistrano.
Yeah. Me and Ali, we went there for a school project once. We
were fourth grade.
Did you guys see the Ghost of Christmas Past?
The mission project was in fifth grade, wasn't it?
Fourth grade.
It doesn't matter. Anyway. Yeah, no, Ali.
We weren't in the same class in fifth grade, were we?
No, we weren't.
No.
No, but anyway.
Fourth grade. Mr. Massaro.
Massaro.
So, Ali, even back then, was really hated colonialism. So, we were hanging
Karl
out.
Karl Marx would never stand for this.
You know, we were hanging out in the, in the mission. And, you know, he was, I interrupted him while he was carving a hammer and sickle into the stone. Because we were looking at the, there was an area, it was like a kitchen, where they were showing you how they used to grind the corn, the manos and the matates, right? Going, oh, that's really cool. I'm like, I wonder what that stuff is in there. Because they showed like the grinder and there was like the corn in there.
Uh-huh.
And Ali looked at it and went, he just grabbed it and put it in his bag and walked out.
Took corn.
Yeah. You had stealing shit.
Yeah.
It's public property.
There's two moments in my life where I've taken things.
Mm.
One was the corn.
Uh-huh.
The rest is people's souls.
And the other one was I told the library that I lost a book when I didn't. So this is true. I mean, if the Crown Valley Library ever wanted to come after me, this is testimony right here. Yeah.
How much did they charge you?
They charged me twice the book was worth.
So you paid twice
But I lied about it.
But you paid for the book.
Because you're not allowed to be like, I just want this book. Let me buy
it. That's true, yeah.
It's a library, not a bookstore. They're not going to be... So I had to literally say, I lost the book.
And you paid twice as much.
It wasn't like twice as much. But you pay the amount of the book and you pay the late fee.
Yeah. So you basically engaged in misinformation.
It was a misinformation campaign. I felt really bad about it, but I enjoyed the book.
Yeah, I know. I figured you were racked with guilt for a long time after that.
The corn, you know, that racked me.
That started Ali's life of crime.
Even if it was free. I felt bad about it, but I liked...
reached over the rope, the stanchion.
I did enjoy the mission's blacksmith.
I thought you were going to say something different.
No. They had a real blacksmith there who was like making shit. Yeah.
When I went to Colonial Williamsburg in Jamestown for my fourth grade field trip...
They didn't have a blacksmith?
They had glass blowers, and then they had the blacksmith and shit. And they had black people dress up as slaves.
They didn't do that.
Yeah, they did.
No, they didn't.
Oh,
yeah. Is that a joke?
No, I'm serious. They had people like it's because they're reenacting it.
Oh my! Oh,
what?
Yeah, man. They had the slave quarters.
Can we talk about the casting call that goes out for that?
Wait, do you remember
looking for a black person must be willing to be chained?
Do you remember the video that went viral of the guy talking about how he went on a field trip?
Yeah,
him picking cotton.
Yeah, he's like, these motherfuckers took us on a cotton field and had us picking cotton for free, and then we gave it to them. Like, oh, cool, we get to catch some cotton. Nope, we gave it to them. Like, what kind of this is in Alabama?
So wait, they actually had.
Yeah, they had people.
My mind just got blown. Because I'm going, wait.
It's Colonial Williamsburg. I don't know if they do it anymore.
Look, you have to ask yourself, how many people supervised, how many supervisors that went through, that approved
this? This was 1999.
It's a great idea. Let's hire black people to be slaves.
1999.
For education purposes.
Yeah. Question is, how many of those people that it went through were black that approved it?
None.
Probably.
Exactly.
Yeah. Colonial Williamsburg is run by a white estate.
Well, it was Jamestown that had that, right? Wow. Colonial Williamsburg was more family-oriented. They had, like, little ice cream shops and shit, and you could walk around. Williamsburg was cool. Jamestown, not so much. You just watched glass blowers, and you walked around the...
I didn't mind watching people doing... I mean, glass blowers were cool. I would have an issue if I saw people reenacting slavery, but I would be okay seeing, like, glass I like milk-making and shit, or, like, butter making. Oh,
yeah, they were churning butter and shit.
Churning butter, yeah.
Yeah, see, when I was 9 years old... I
figure he would be an expert
at woke. Yeah, I do. I churn my own butter. But when I was 9, I wasn't woke bae.
No, this you were never bae. But this
woke
bae
now.
This currently nerdy has really been a secret project of making you into woke.
Woke bae?
Into a woke person.
Yes. I'm woke now. I'm wearing a shirt that says not my president.
It's been a long project. Yes. This podcast.
It's been 4 years now, and I'm finally learning things.
This is how you indoctrinate people with Marxism.
Are you really, though?
I mean, semi, all right? It's like I'm getting there. It's like fluid, all right? Wokeness is fluid. Yeah,
limpness,
like,
and semi are things that he's very familiar with in his life.
What? That's just inappropriate. Don't talk about my penis. It's
look,
weird.
I have to mention something. We've been talking about our childhoods, and that's nice. But there is something that has caught my attention. You said family, and this reminded me of this news story that has been captivating America for the past week or so.
Ah, which one? There's many of them.
No, this one's the best.
Oh, this one's the best?
This one's my favorite. Is Wes Goodman.
Wesley.
Yes.
Who's Wes Goodman?
He is an ex-Republican Ohio lawmaker who resigned last week because he was caught having the gay sex.
Ooh.
Not just anywhere, but in his office.
Ooh.
Now, what makes this particularly salacious?
Salacious?
Which makes it such kismet, if we will say.
Kismet.
Such delicious kismet is that he happens to be an anti-gay activist. He's anti-LGBTQ.
Uh-huh.
He's pro what's called natural family.
Ooh.
Natural family is the Christian code for a dude and a woman.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
that's what
course.
They mean.
Man and a woman.
Natural woman. Yeah. That's their way of saying
natural woman or natural family.
Natural family.
It's their Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
That's their way of saying
that's
that,
a good
you
one.
Know, committed natural marriage is between a man and a woman.
Oh, yes.
Whereas that other stuff, the gays,
the sodomites.
Is unnatural. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sodomites or catamites, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But what was particularly great about him is that he had been secretly engaging in sexual encounters with men online.
Ooh.
Via cell phone.
Grindr?
And apparently.
Ooh, what's his name?
Wes Goodman.
Wes Goodman. His Grindr name? A Few Good Men.
Ooh. Ooh. But what was particularly great is that he
sex
apparently.
Yes. Yes, sex Goodman.
Apparently, one of the great things about it is that the Republican Party kind of knew about it, but didn't say anything. They just kept it under wraps until he got caught with a dude in his office. Now, the being caught in the office bit for me, I think, is just, it's the icing on the cake.
It is true.
It is the icing
it's
on the cake.
It's very poetic,
it's
isn't
very
it?
Poetic.
Yeah.
Now, there's a long theory that a lot of anti-gay activists and whatnot usually are a result of reaction formation, that they have, not necessarily that they themselves are gay, but they have had gay thoughts or...
Yeah,
they have certain urges.
May have had
they
encounters.
Have a, they have a violent
touch
kind
the penis
of reaction to. Mm-hmm. So the idea of
fondled
like, why do
balls.
I find Matthew McConaughey so hot?
Why do I
then they
touch
get angry
balls.
And they march in the streets, right?
Mm-hmm.
They do shit like that.
Yep.
So there is this theory in psychology. It's called reaction formation, that it's a defense mechanism in order to preserve your identity, that you then reject that part of you that you are most afraid of, and you do so very violently.
Uh-huh.
It's why anti-porn activists tend to be the biggest
deviant.
Taste,
right?
They're the ones with the donkey penises and all that type of stuff, right? Donkeys and honeycombs.
What?
Isn't that why that Martin Sempa guy has all those pictures of like weird BDSM people that
they
he shows
also,
like in Africa?
There's all sorts of like fascinating stuff. There's another example. Jimmy Stewart was famous for this. What? Why are you making?
No, he
a,
said,
"What is that?"
The Sempa guy. They lick the doo doo. That's the guy you're talking. That's the guy you're talking about.
Are you making
like
that hand motion?
That's what they do. Yeah, the doo doo come out and they lick the doo doo.
Like we were in mid conversation when you made that gesture. It was alarming to all of us.
I couldn't, because
it was so disturbing.
When he brought up that gentleman, I kept thinking of licking the doo-doo.
I can't. We can't talk about this much more because this is getting way too excited.
We can't talk about this if you keep making that hand gesture. Doo-doo. It's just not. It's just making.
Stop. Why are you with two hands now?
It's making a lot of people uncomfortable.
Double fisting.
Just a lot of weird shit's going on.
We should record.
But I am.
A video of this.
I'm just going to point out that there is this fascinating trend of people getting caught doing stupid shit, and you just go. That's 2017 for you.
That's true, yeah. No, I feel like, yeah, Sex Goodman's got some pretty... I mean, there's also...
I don't know why it made me laugh, Sex Goodman, as if you hadn't said it before. Just because you kept calling him Rex Goodman before we went on air.
It's getting annoying. Now
it's... Someone tell me what Rex Goodman is from. It's from something.
No, from nowhere.
It's Rex Grossman. He played quarterback for the Chicago Bears.
He doesn't know shit about football.
He also, why did you say football?
Is it football?
He said football.
It is true. I don't know shit about football, right? But I think Rex Goodman's like from Dodgeball or something.
Maybe.
Possibly.
But either way.
He's my favorite person of 2017.
Yeah. In terms of like poetic justice, though, wasn't also the guy who introduced the bathroom bill, didn't he just lose also?
Yeah, he lost to a transgender
politician guy. Virginia. The guy who said he's the most...
That Virginia was a completely fascinating like moment of in-your-face Trump.
That guy claimed to be the most homophobic man in Virginia.
That's true.
He openly said that.
Yeah. He said, I am the most homophobic man in Virginia.
And he lost.
To a transgender woman.
To a transgender woman.
And then her response...
She kicked his ass.
Was like, he's a constituent now, so I'm not going to disrespect
him. You know, it was a very good... It was a very classy response. Very gracious.
You know what happened with that, right? Yeah. She wrote, like, an angry letter to him, and, like, he didn't respond properly. Yeah. So she's like, fuck it. I'm going to run.
Well, that's a lot of what happened in Virginia. Like, there are people who ran... Because something happened, the guy who lost his girlfriend on TV, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Ran on one of the strongest gun control platforms nationwide, and he won.
I'm surprised in Virginia too,
right? Because Virginia is actually pretty pro Second Amendment. So there, Virginia was a really fascinating example of not just how 2017 is a weird ass year for politics, but also people getting their just desserts, right? These Republican politicians who were really running on this kind of Trump coattails. They were gonna out Trump. You know, Gillespie sitting there, fucking talking about immigration and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Northman was a little iffy himself, but you had this clear sign sent by Virginian constituents that said, "Yeah, that's not gonna
wait about that life."
Yeah, no, it was a very clear example. But that said, I don't know if we're gonna be able to extrapolate what happened in Virginia to other states. Virginia is a purple state. So that may give us an example of what will happen in California, what will happen in maybe Pennsylvania, possibly in Georgia, which is also starting to lean purple.
Yeah.
But it's not an example.
Will it break actually the ruby reds, right?
Yeah. Will it break something like Alabama, which is coming up next month?
Yeah.
Right? With Roy Moore, which we've talked about Roy Moore, right? And people are like, oh, that's the death knell. I don't think so. First of all, it's fucking Alabama.
Yeah, that's true. Right. I was watching the Cowboys get destroyed by the Philadelphia Eagles last Sunday night, which was a very sad night for me. Yeah. But then afterwards, I just kept it on NBC when I was doing my homework.
Yeah.
And like the
homework.
Yeah, I was doing my homework. Leave me alone, motherfucker.
Please.
I can do it. You want to see my grades? I'll show you my grades. Anyways.
This is trying to relearn arithmetic.
Official transcripts.
I'll show you this. Anyways. So they were doing like an interview with Alabama voters. So they went to this one old man who was like, I've voted Republican my whole life, but I cannot vote for Roy Moore. So I will not vote this election. And then they went to this younger guy, right? He was like probably like in his late 30s, early 40s. And he's like, well, I'm going to still vote for Roy Moore.
Holy
because
shit.
I feel like he's the only one trying to actually do something.
Well, the question is, who is he trying to do is the problem.
Whom?
Here's the thing about Roy Moore, and this is why I think he's got a strong chance of winning. I hope he doesn't win. I hope he loses, and it's a big F you to Donald Trump yet again.
He loses bigly.
But if he wins, I'm not going to be surprised, because it's Alabama. It's one of those states that I've for years have begged for them to secede from the Union. It's like, for God's sakes, we shouldn't have gone to war of this.
Wait, are those the Roll Tide people?
Yeah, Alabama's Roll Tide. Crimson Tide.
The thing about Roy Moore,
and
too,
they have
is
Auburn
like,
there, too.
His story has gotten worse and worse over the weeks.
Yeah.
So it started off with, like, multiple women have come forth that were corroborated with witnesses. But then, like, not only have witnesses corroborated what they've said, but then you have people like the mall manager that's like, yeah, we banned him from the mall.
Yeah, but here's
the thing, though. This is, like, in the 60s.
The principal that goes, we banned him from the mall because he was too creepy. Principal from a high school is like, yeah, he would call in to school, pulled a girl, had us pull a girl out of trigonometry just so he could ask her out on the phone because he was a deputy district attorney. He would use his authority. He would call in. He'd be like, so-and-so's in class. Please pull her out. And they even remember the class. Like, she was in trig. We'd pull her out. He's come forth. Now, just recently, we had a cop come forth that's like, yeah, whenever he came to high school football games, we kept an eye on him so that he wouldn't harass the cheerleaders. Like, it gets worse and worse and worse.
He's steering into the skid. He was like, oh, God's on my side. And
yeah, he's very, Christianity. He's doubled down.
Let me tell you something, brothers.
Certain Republican leadership have broken with him, right? Mm-hmm. So the people who have nothing to lose, the Jeff Flakes of the world, right? The Corkers of the world, and even Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, kind of like, yeah. Hold on, Mitch McConnell is. He didn't fully break with him, but he's like, yeah, I believe the
Turkey
accusers.
Turkey Neck McConnell.
Turkey Neck McConnell is like, I believe the accusers, right? But he didn't go any further than that. But Roy Moore is doubled down. He's like, God is on my side. Wickedness, evil is after me. No, evil is you. Well, you know, trying to sleep with the 14-year-old.
Well, let me tell you something, good brothers. All right, my good brothers. Mary was a child when she married Joseph, and Jesus Christ came out of that. So if it's good for our Lord and Savior, it's good for Roy Moore.
For the record, that would be an Alabaman state senator, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Head of the GOP who actually said that. The governor, who's a female for the record, said, and I believe the women, but I'm still going to vote Roy Moore because at least he's not a Democrat. And this is why that's worse. That's
worse.
And then his wife, of course, has come out with the women support Roy Moore shit, right? Never mind the fact that Roy Moore is his own worst enemy. He admitted that the first time he was sexually attracted to his wife was when she was 15. And then he admitted, like, yeah, I dated them when they were in high school. I always asked their parents' permission. I'm like, no, that's not how it works. So, you know, if you're a 30-year-old, you can't go up and ask a 13. You know, if I ask your parents, can I go out with you? No, it's not.
Would you like milkshakes, darling?
That's not how this works.
I got Jesus juice.
So Roy Moore is a disgusting pig, but the reason why I think he's got a chance of winning is exactly what the governor said. At least he's a Republican, or at least he's not a Democrat. The American politics, and this is really unique to America in respect to as amongst a kind of so-called Western developed nations, you only see this type of partisanship in like third world failed states.
Yeah.
Where the one side doesn't see the other side as an opposition, loyal opposition, right? This is very common in parliamentary systems. The one party wins, the other party becomes literally called the loyal opposition, right?
Yeah.
Her Majesty's loyal opposition. In America, that's not how it works.
No.
Republicans view Democrats as un-American.
That's true. It's like this. It's the kind of gangland style stuff.
Yeah,
it's weird. We saw it with, I remember a couple of years ago, and, you know, because I'm bringing it up because he's in the news, but the whole Robert Mugabe thing.
Yeah. Zimbabwe, he just resigned.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally resigned today.
I remember him holding, quote-unquote, elections, you know, in 2008, 2009 against Morgan Tsvangirai, right? And they were talking about how people who were supporters of Tsvangirai were getting burnt with, like, acid, and we're getting beaten in the street and everything.
Holy shit.
And Mugabe's all like, "Oh, you know, I don't tell these people what to do. They love me so much, though, these people are enemies of, you know, of the administration."
Yeah,
right. And it became this whole thing. And I mean, you can't get more third world than dictatorship than Robert Mugabe.
Yeah, well, right? I mean, that's an example of American politics.
I challenge you saying that either side can't do it because one side can. Right, Franken got accused or has been accused of.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that Franken. This isn't about sexual harassment. This is about seeing one another as
Americans. But like with the Democrats, at least they'll hold Franken accountable. Franken's holding himself accountable.
Sort of. Yeah, I mean they've held Franken accountable, but there's other people they haven't held accountable.
Yeah, but
the House in particular is kind of coming under scrutiny as literally paying hush money in order to keep these scandals out. The reality is that, yeah, Democrats may be better in regards to this. And I'm not denying that. And I'm not, this isn't both sides. What I'm saying, though, in America, Republicans in particular view Democrats as un-American to the point where, now we're starting to see a little bit of this with this Russian bot stuff, accusing everyone of being a Russian bot. But we will definitely see it amongst Republicans with the idea that somehow Democrats are the worst enemies of America.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw during the elections in 2016, people were ready to call pitchforks. They had a little quote, I'm not metaphorically speaking, literally saying we're going to grab our pitchforks. This would be Sheriff Clark.
We have pitchforks still?
Maybe some people do. And then you had fucking Walsh talking about how we're going to grab our guns and muskets.
Fuck that guy.
Right? If they were talking very openly about civil war because they view Democrats as completely, not just, oh, we disagree with them politically and policy-wise, but they're still Americans.
Yeah.
As, no, they're evil and they must be destroyed. That's weird because in a two-party system, if you can't figure out how to govern, you end up with what 2017 looks like, a party that's unable to pass anything.
Yeah.
Right, because the reality is the two-party system works in a fashion, in a dialectic fashion. You have one side propose one thing, you have another side propose something else. They come together and they disagree, and out of that disagreement comes compromise. That is how the two-party system works. That's how it's always worked. And yes, there have always been rhetoric that's been kind of harsh on both sides, but we've never been to this type of point besides the Civil War.
When do you think it started?
Where I would argue that this started probably in the 90s.
So under
Newt Bush. Gingrich is the one who... really, Paul.
Under Clinton.
So we saw the right move really far to the right, thanks to Lee Atwater and Nixon. Right, they created the modern Republican Party.
Correct.
But even under then, the Republican Party was a series of coalitions. You had the paleo conservatives, the neoconservatives, right, the Christian right, etc. These coalitions, however, had to be managed by somebody. That somebody is usually the Speaker of the House. And in the 90s, good old Newt politicized the speakership in a way that no speaker before had. The speaker is meant to be a managerial position. That is, you're there to ensure that government moves swiftly, that the House functions. What he did is he used his pulpit, basically, to attack Clinton. The impeachment, all of that stuff, right? That was all Newt. And what resulted was you had these new congressmen that were coming in, being flooded in, these acolytes of Newt that had zero-sum ideology stances. It's either our way or nothing.
Yeah.
Right? This was then reiterated vis-a-vis the Tea Party, who were the descendants of this kind of group. The Tea Party comes into power during the Obama administration, and they had that same mentality of zero-sum. They had learned from the Clintonian era. From Newt's speakership. As a result, you ended up with a Republican Party that you have some of them who are willing to negotiate and work in the middle, but they, because they have to deal with the hard right within their own faction,
just can't.
They can't.
Yeah.
The idea is, and John Boehner in his recent expose or profile talks about this. He goes, anytime I sat down with Obama to work anything out, my own party would turn on me.
Yeah.
And that's the reality.
That's Crybaby Boehner.
That's Crybaby Boehner, right? That's the reality of American politics now. That trajectory that we've seen from Newt to now has created a party in which you no longer have party politics. You don't. You have two parties that are willing, that are at civil war with one another. This is why I believe that Republicans will still vote Roy Moore. The party of family.
Yep.
The party of family, right?
Family values.
But we're going to protect kids. Got to protect the children from the transgendered.
Yep.
Right? That's why they oppose the bathrooms.
They diddle them.
You gotta protect. But we're going to vote a child predator into the Senate.
Yeah.
This is what I love about the Republican Party, is like they're beyond parody.
Wait, if he gets voted in, he's a senator. But they do like an investigation, can they kick him out?
No.
No, they can't.
I mean, they can do all sorts of, they're not going to do
it. The ethics committee can't kick
him out. The ethics committee can what's called sanction him.
Which is, what does that mean?
There's nothing.
That's stupid.
It's just like with anything else in Washington. Yeah. Really doesn't do anything.
And then what's the great part about it, too, is like Donald Trump has been jumping on the whole fucking Al Franken stuff.
Yeah, he tweeted calls him Al Frankenstein.
He tweeted that shit out right away. Al Franken, you're nasty. Never mind the fact that 16 women have accused him of something. He's just completely glossed over that. But now he's a full-on supporter of Roy Moore. What I love about this particular bit is that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the wonderful, brilliant propagandist that she is, literally went up to the press corps and they're like, what is Donald Trump? He believes the women. We should believe the women. What about the 16 women that came before them? Those women, not those women, though. The president denies those women. You just kind of go, do you hear yourself speak? Like, do you hear the words that are coming out of that disgusting hole that you call a mouth?
You know who should run against Donald Trump in 2020 and who will not stand for any of Donald Trump's madness? My man from the Big Baller brand, LeVar Ball.
Is that the Reading Rainbow guy?
No, that's LeVar Burton.
Oh.
LeVar Ball
is the only LeVar I know is the Reading Rainbow guy.
LeVar Ball.
He's the only worthy LeVar
on
this podcast.
You don't know LeVar Ball.
He teaches people how to read.
LeVar Ball.
Reading Rainbow. I love that shit.
LeVar Ball.
I've fucking watched that shit religiously.
It's in a book. Just take a look.
This actually,
Butterfly in the sky.
I'm the butterfly. Butterfly in the sky. I don't know what the butterfly had anything to do with anything.
Did you ever, remember when we watched it, did you ever sing with the theme song like all the kids in class did?
Hell yeah.
Of course I fucking sang with the theme song. It's Reading Rainbow.
Yeah.
If you didn't sing with the Reading Rainbow theme song, you were uncouth, uncivilized piece of shit.
But you know what the best part was? It was always a little crackly from the VHS tape. So like the audio was a little crackly.
He's actually right about this. The audio was never quite good with
VHS. Crackly.
maybe that's why we sang the theme song.
Reading Rainbow. Yeah,
Reading Rainbow. But LeVar Ball.
Yep. Not Reading Rainbow.
Yes, LeVar Ball from Big Baller.
We're going to just call him Not Reading Rainbow LeVar.
Okay. Or you can call him Triple B.
What?
Big Baller Brand.
Okay.
All right.
What did Not Reading Rainbow LeVar do?
So he has got into a spat with Donald Trump.
Because this is true.
Because so LeVar has three children that are very good basketball players. Lonzo Ball.
Three children.
Yeah. Lonzo Ball, who plays for the Lakers right now. Yep. He's their starting point guard. LiAngelo Ball.
Let me guess the last name of the third one.
Guess Ball? The first name. No, yeah, all right, but guess the first name.
I don't know about
the first name. So it's LeVar, Lonzo, LiAngelo, and LaMelo.
Huh.
Yeah, so they all get the la.
They got the L.
Yeah, they got that L, and then like a bigger, what is it, L-A, and then it goes up, whatever. But anyways.
L apostrophe?
Yeah, that shit. No, but there's no apostrophe. It just goes up. Whatever. Anyways. What? You know the one, you know like MacArthur? The A, like it's M-C and then capital A, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of confusing.
Dude, just go on with the goddamn story.
Anyways. So, LiAngelo, who is a Bruin, one of these gentlemen on our dais here, he was in China.
Yep.
And he was caught shoplifting.
Yep.
So he got arrested. Yep. Him and three other students from UCLA.
Mm-mm.
And Donald Trump spoke to the president of China.
She.
And got them out of jail and back to the U.S. You know, he did his job as his president. Now, LeVar never thanked them. So Donald Trump went on Twitter and said, I should have let those children rot in jail. You know, these people are ungrateful. They never thanked me. Right? And then LeVar went on CNN yesterday and they asked him, why didn't you thank Donald Trump? Why should I thank Donald Trump? I would have thanked him if he put him on that plane of his. There's a lot of room on that plane. Why couldn't he put LeAngelo on that plane? Is it you? Did you thank the doctor who brought you into this world?
He's got a point
there. So why would I thank Donald Trump?
He's got a point there. But I also want to point out that it's not even a coincidence now that the only people Donald Trump really goes after
are
women and people of color.
Yeah.
And if they're women of color, holy shit, he's got all sorts of words for them.
Oh, jeez.
But I love the fact that, like, okay, he fought with Obama. He's fighting with the NFL people. Yes. He's fighting with LeVar, not Reading Rainbow.
Ball.
And somehow, in the midst of all this, Eminem ripped him a new one.
Yep.
Greg Popovich regularly shits on his face.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump hasn't said a word about either of
those.
That's
true.
Nope.
And he backs a pedophile.
And he backs a pedophile. This is the great... Donald Trump is... He is Republicanism revealed. Yeah. It's like when you remove the mask, right?
Uh-huh.
You take the shell off of Turtle Mitch McConnell. What was revealed...
Scary little bitch.
...is Donald Trump.
Oh, I thought it was a scared little bitch. Mitch McConnell's just a terrible person.
He's a terrible
person. Every time I hear his name and think of his face, like, my blood boils.
Turtle.
I just want to punch him. He's got the most punchable face in Congress.
He is, no, the most punchable face in Congress.
Ted Cruz.
Without a doubt, is Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
No, hands down. I feel like Ted Cruz. No, but here's most punchable face. Okay. In America, I'd go on.
I feel like I would have to punch Ted Cruz because the face that he gives looks like he's going to steal my soul. So it's Ted like Cruz, a punch in defense.
Ted Cruz is the great part is like he may possibly be the Zodiac Killer.
Yes.
Or he may possibly be Kevin from The Office. It's like you're not quite because you know he always looks slightly constipated and apologetic in his face. Have you ever seen like, his face always looks like
yeah.
Oh, I shat on the carpet. He has that look. He has the look that dogs give you when they poop on the carpet. That's a Kevin from The Office face.
He also reminds me of like an Eddie Munster for some reason, like a vampire.
Oh, maybe because of his hair a little bit.
But see, like that's why I feel like I'd have to punch him in self-defense. McConnell, I want to punch that turkey neck like just off his face, just bam. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, like, you're gone, motherfucker. It's Thanksgiving's coming up. I'm about to cook your ass. Punk ass bitch McConnell.
I do like
really violent with Republicans.
Yeah, he's very violent. I don't feel violent towards any of them. I just find this moment so bizarre and twisted. The Republican Party is bending over backwards, twisting itself in knots to defend a ephebophile pedophile.
Yeah.
While at the same time, their president is openly fighting with black people.
Yes.
Yeah. And not even trying to hide it. He's ungrateful. Like, you really?
Yeah. You ungrateful N-word is what he wants to say.
He's literally just one word away from saying it.
Yeah, literally.
But you know, it's not like this is a new phenomenon. You realize that the whole concept of bad seeds, bad apples, was actually revealed to be rot from up all the way down, right? Like the reality is
there was no bad apples.
Yeah.
There were just a couple good apples.
Exactly. Really, at the end of the day, there was like, okay, well, some of these are edible. The other ones...
They might be a little sour, but you could eat, you could make a pie.
It's like our police department.
And you know, we can't even like... Honestly, like it's easy to laugh at it now, right? And I laugh at it a lot because I just rewatched like a Kevin Hart stand up. You remember the guy code thing?
Yeah.
I'm hungry as shit.
Yeah.
Right? And that's like about him getting caught.
Yeah.
And it's literally happening over and over again. It's happening over and over again in Washington right
now. Well, I love that there's this purging that's happening, right? Yeah. It's like everything is being finally revealed. First of all, you had all these men in entertainment positions, right?
Yeah.
That are just openly getting caught. You had Charlie Rose has gotten caught. You have all these people, right? Just
the director of Toy Story.
Yeah. Louis C.K.
Yeah, yeah.
His ass got caught. What a weird ass apology.
He said, I did it.
He admitted it, but then it was like a weird.
So he said.
He made it about himself.
No, he said, I used my power of like stardom.
I didn't know. He's like, I didn't realize how many people looked up to me, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I was like, okay.
And I'm taking this as a learning experience.
Listen, dude, whipping your dick out. Yeah. Was pretty standard.
That's such a ridiculous way to say it because you know what? Technically, if you were homeless and you're whipping your dick out in front of women, it's just as bad as if you were famous and you're whipping your dick out in front of women.
If you had asked me when I was a youngling,
okay,
a young lad, that in 2017 in my 30s we would be having a debate over whether whipping your dick out or was something you should do, you shouldn't do. I would be like, okay, I thought this was stuff we settled. Yeah,
standard.
Right? Like, we had settled this stuff. If you're 30 or something, you shouldn't be dating 13-year-olds. You shouldn't be whipping your dick out. You shouldn't be grabbing women without their permission. Like, these are things that, like, collectively, as a society, I thought we had agreed upon. But somehow, 2017 turned out to be the year where we went, you know what? Let's go back to the basics.
It's like Dave Chappelle and his white friend Chip.
Yeah,
who's all like, "I'm sorry, I didn't know I couldn't do that." Right?
What it is is, I think it's like we need to go back to the basics. Is what it is.
Well, the thing is, it's a triangle of rape culture, right? So at the top, at the very top, you have rape, right? We know that's the worst thing you can't do.
Rape,
right? So that's the worst, and then it goes down, and at every other level, people are like, they excuse it. So at the very bottom, you have like rape jokes and things like that.
Who taught you this pyramid?
I seen it on the Facebooks.
I could tell.
And then you have.
You could tell when it's not his own.
And then you have like the unsolicited dick pics, you know?
Yeah.
And then the sending of the nudes.
You've sent those.
And then the rape. I've never sent an unsolicited dick pic. People have asked for them. I don't like sending dick pics. It's weird. But like, dicks aren't attractive. Like, why would you send a picture of your dick?
You also, you know, got to see through all that forest.
Oh, man, come on. I'm Manscaper, bro. What's wrong with you?
Anyways.
This is such a genital specific.
Yeah. Like genital. Why'd you have to bring up my penis? I'm sitting there talking about rape culture, and you're over here saying I'm sending unsolicited dick pics.
You said unsolicited dick pic.
I've never sent an
unsolicited dick pic. It naturally followed that you would follow that.
Why would I send an unsolicited dick pic? Yeah, well, I have become woke.
This is the question. Is
yeah,
like,
I don't know. You were double-fisting buttholes earlier this episode. I don't know what you're talking about.
Lick the doo-doo. Look,
the question that we should be asking as men, right? Three dudes, here we are talking about rape culture. Oh, yeah. We're talking about sexual harassment. Is in what ways are we complicit? How many times have we, as guys, made women feel uncomfortable?
Yeah.
How many times have we hugged them, touched them, overstayed our welcome? How many times have we been creepy, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't think it's creepy. We might think we're being charming, or I'm just trying to date.
Yeah.
Right? But how many times have we done it?
Wow.
You got to rethink. You got to sit back and go, how many times have I
you're trying to take used my power, place my in authority, my head sometimes.
It is true, and I think about it now, and there's plenty of times where I didn't think that it was the wrong thing to do.
Mm.
And then, but when you really when you kind of scratch away the surface and you really think about those actions that you took,
yeah,
you go, really, it's messed up. And then if you're able to look at it objectively, if you're going to take your own personal self out of that situation and look at it as if you saw someone else doing it and you still, and you have issue with it, then, you know, that's self-introspection. Yeah. It's very scary.
Super important that it's scary, but it's much needed, right?
Yeah. But I think
so. This is something that I think one of the things that guys can do importantly, we gave kind of rules before when we talked about guys, right? But one of the most important things that guys can do to be a really good ally is just be an introspective, understand the role you play. Mm-hmm. Don't sit out there and champion women's rights and talk about feminism and equality if behind the scenes you're being a douchebag and a creep.
True.
You know what I mean? And maybe you don't realize that you're being, and that's why that self-introspection is desperately needed. Yeah. There's another element to this that is interesting. Is so there's a congressman that's currently being caught up in this from Michigan or Minnesota, one of those states.
It's an M state.
And the source that broke the story that BuzzFeed picked up is Mike Cernovich, who's this alt-right douchebag.
Did he get banned from Twitter?
No,
he got
not
his
yet.
Verification
no,
taken
no,
away.
No, but there's a bunch of other people that got banned.
Baked Alaska did.
Baked Alaska got banned from Twitter. Richard Spencer lost his check mark. It was a good day on Twitter.
Did you see that? Did you see Baked Alaska's response?
Oh, he lost his shit.
He was in an In and Out parking lot, just walking around with a selfie stick, just running around.
Lost his shit.
And
I loved it.
Yeah, and he's asking people.
You know, I mean, it could have possibly been, I don't know, people were like, free speech. Could possibly be the fact that he literally tweeted out at one point that he, through his own personal research, that he had discovered that there was many Jews in media, and that there is a reason. It's reasonable that people want to gas them. That's his actual tweet, right? Motherfucker isn't making Holocaust jokes. He was trying to bring back the Holocaust. I'm okay with him being banned.
Yep.
Fuck his free speech.
Bye bye.
Yeah. If you call for genocide of people, fuck your free speech. Just, you know, another rule of thumb.
And also, I know the president uses Twitter, but Twitter is not a government entity.
Yeah, yes. Don't get that. Yeah. Anyways, the point that I was trying to make is that you're now seeing the people on the right in particular, the alt-right in particular, using sexual assault and weaponizing it.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, standing behind Roy Moore, but then targeting Al Franken. Right, and this is where I think male allies in particular need to be really conscious of. If you're introspective, if you're a real ally, you can be an important figure in that type of battle, in that fight, right? Ensuring that sexual assault and harassment doesn't just become a political football that gets passed around between left and right, etc. Now, before we move on, I do want to mention somebody in 2017 who I think should win Person of the Year for 2017. He's the exact opposite of the self-awareness that we have been talking about, preaching, and calling for on this podcast.
Well, that's not breaking it down enough, because there's plenty of people.
No. What's great about this guy is he is probably the least self-aware person on the planet.
Roy Moore.
His name,
Sean Spicer,
is Carter Page.
Oh,
Carter Page has quickly become
who?
My favorite. He's one of the Trump He used to be a Trump campaigner.
Okay.
He was a bald guy. Ooh, skinny. Looks really nervous.
That's why you like him.
He looks like he's about to pee himself any second now.
Mm-hmm.
I love this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a deep, deep appreciation for just how stupid he is.
Uh-huh.
This is a man who's so desperate for his 5 seconds of fame. By the way, he wears fantastic hats. You have to check him out.
Okay.
He's literally that moron who's, I kid you not, they tweeted out this photo of him where he's wearing this ridiculous hat and he's whistling his way, humming his way into the Capitol building. And they're like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just dropping off papers for the Russian investigation. He's one of those guys who's so desperate for the attention that he has become unwittingly the unraveling of the Trump administration. He has done more damage to the Trump administration than anyone has done so intentionally. And it's because he keeps doing stupid shit. He went on to fucking MSNBC with Chris Hayes, liberal MSNBC, gave an interview, and in the interview, completely implicated himself.
What do you mean? What did he do?
So he's like, they asked him, he did his first interview, he's like, did you or did you not meet with the Russians? Like, I wouldn't know anything about it. Then he went on to do a second interview and go, look, dude, we have evidence that you talked to Russians. Well, maybe I spoke to some of the Russians. And you just go, wait, hold on a minute. Just the other day, they asked them, they're like, okay, did you or did you not? Because he got caught going to Hungary, mm-hmm. where he was meeting with some foreign policy people. And he goes, they're like, did you or did you not meet with any Russians while you were in Hungary? And goes, well, there were some Russians in the hallway. This guy is the best. He is the best person ever.
Does he not have a lawyer?
I don't think he has a lawyer. Like, and this is what I love about him, is that not only does he have no lawyer, but he has like no awareness of the damage. Like, I can literally see Trump fuming in the White House because this dumbass keeps opening his mouth and incriminating himself, the Trump administration, and everyone over and over and over. You've got to be kidding me. You know, he testified in front of Congress, but he would only testify if they would make his testimony public.
What?
So we all got a chance to see it, and it's incriminating. It's bad. He would only
testify unless if they made it public?
It's like, so bad.
Like, what is he trying to do? Like,
there's parts where senators and congressmen are like, do you have legal representation? There's a moment where he goes, do you know what he does? He goes, I plead the fifth.
But
he goes, I plead the fifth on these questions, but I'll answer these questions. And they're like, you do understand that pleading the fifth, you're supposed to answer no questions. And he goes, well, pleading the fifth only covered. Like, he literally gives the legal justifications for why he should answer these questions. He's the only person I know who's literally pleaded the fifth, but shot himself in the foot by pleading the fifth. I love this guy so much because he is like, he is this fantastic trickster fool figure that's just walking around causing massive chaos to the Trump administration without even meaning it.
This is my Patronus.
My wonder is, like, someday are we going to find out that Carter Page was some type of...
secret Democrat cell?
No, was he like some type of form of advanced art, living art... trolling that happened, and there's going to be a documentary about it years from now. Like, is he surrealism embodied? Like, what exactly is going on here? Because there's no way anyone can be this dumb.
Wait, is Carter Page our Jar Jar Binks as a Sith Lord?
He is.
Yeah.
Jar Jar Binks is a Sith Lord. I mean, he's secretly done so much damage, but the beauty of it is he doesn't have to have force powers.
Yeah.
He just opens his mouth and you just look at him and go, wait, what? Even I at some point tweeted, somebody needs to get this guy a lawyer. Because this guy
is the only guy
I know who will happily walk his ass into a jail cell just so he can get his 5 minutes of fame.
This is a good test of how far idiocy will take you in Washington.
How far did this guy go? Well, forget Washington. How far idiocy will take you with the Trump administration?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The fact that anyone sat down with this fucker for even 2 minutes and went, yep, he's definitely on our campaign, just goes to show you, this dude is fantastic.
Yeah. Listen, he may be your favorite person of 2017, but I have my least favorite person of 2017.
Who's that?
Ajit Pai.
Yeah, fuck Ajit Pai. Let's be real right now. That guy is pissing me off.
You want to talk about people you want to punch in the face?
He's got a punchable
this
face.
This son of a bitch. And then, you know what? For those of you guys who don't know who Ajit Pai is...
He's the one who's about to cancel our podcast.
Yeah. So he's the chairman of the FCC, right? And he's spearheading net neutrality. And
he's against net neutrality.
Sorry, yeah, spearheading the effort.
He doesn't openly say he's against net neutrality.
But he is against.
He's against what he called regulation.
Yeah, and this guy, like, for those of you guys who don't know why people are against, are trying to push back against people trying to take away net neutrality, what it does is it puts like your internet speeds in lanes. So certain websites can pay premiums to get faster like megabits per second to their websites. So if you're a company like Netflix, right? This whole thing started because Verizon was like slowing down customers who were using Netflix.
Comcast.
Yeah. It was Verizon.
And Comcast.
Yeah, Verizon and Comcast. Well, now Comcast is called Spectrum.
Comcast has been was strong-arming Netflix for a long time.
Yeah. And they were slowing down the speeds for Netflix. Now, 53% of internet users will say they will not go on a website if it takes too long to load.
Yeah. Right?
That Google did the survey.
Yeah.
And
so in 2015, what happened is the regulations were put into place in which they would use Title II, common carrier, as the way they would deal with net neutrality. It was a regulation put in by the Obama administration. Title II of the Communications Act of 1934.
Okay.
The argument that they basically made is that the Title II would cover these, would ensure that carriers didn't determine the speeds, that they couldn't create lanes, that they wouldn't regulate, that the government would regulate. Now, people are worried about government regulation, and rightly so. Right? Yeah. Government regulation can be problematic.
Yes.
But government regulation on markets works. Glass-Steagall would be an example of how you can put in regulations in so-called free market systems, and it produces good things, right? Pi wants to remove those Title II regulations from the Obama era.
Yeah.
He's a proponent. He's not saying he wants to remove net neutrality. He wants the market to regulate it.
Which is not a good thing.
Yeah, his market-driven model is a problem.
Yeah.
Because it assumes that the carriers that have made their promises will somehow keep those promises.
Yeah.
Because the carriers have promised, like, we won't create fast and slow lanes, we won't do this type of stuff. But the problem is that without any enforcement of that,
yeah,
that's true.
Banks promised that they wouldn't do shady shit, and then they were fucking buying up subprime mortgages and doing all sorts. They promised they wouldn't do, but they still did it.
It's very interesting how I think it's funny because the argument actually is pretty standard. This, we want to deregulate because we believe that overregulation is stifling the market, right? We believe in quote-unquote freedom. But in actuality, you know, it's not freedom when only a handful of people have access to it.
Yeah.
And the only people that have access to being able to control that is these big companies. So you have to basically, and then he also talks about how he thinks it'll help kind of create a boon for smaller companies to kind of get to innovate. Internet service providers and everything. But in actuality, it's like if you can't even pay the admission price to get in to do anything, then you're screwed and you're going to be eventually either picked up by these big shell corporations or these big companies, or you're just going to die off.
Yeah. I mean, right?
The innovation, to drive that a little clearer, is the point that you're trying to make and why this matters so much for innovation, right? Is that if you're a lot of the innovation that happens in the United States often comes from really small groups, companies, or individuals who come up with brilliant ideas and then are able to use the internet as an equalizer. Because the internet has been the great equalizer. It has, to some extent, over-democratized a lot of things.
Yeah.
Well, right? I mean, you look at things like Uber now or any like food delivery service.
All democratized, stuff, right? You code, whatever, you can create an app, etc. What happens is if when you remove the regulations about net neutrality, that equalizer is no longer accessible. So that individual innovation no longer has the same access as, say, some company like Verizon or Comcast, etc. And so that's why net neutrality can have a severe impact on innovation in the United States and therefore the economy. More importantly, though, what happens is the average person isn't going to feel the consequence. Isn't they're not going to feel suddenly that internet's going to slow down.
Correct.
That's a common misconception. While it's true that certain website fast lanes may be created and you might start seeing a tiered internet system, right? A class-based internet system. What's really going to happen is your prices are going to go up.
Yeah, exactly. So what you'll see now is, so like most people are paying a flat rate. So you pay like, let's say that you pay $40 a month for your internet, right? And you get a certain amount of speeds. With the deregulation of it, what they could do is like, all right, we're going to charge you $14.99 for the video package. We're also going to, and then if you want the video game package, you got to pay another $12.99. For the social media, you got to pay another $19.99. For just your email, you pay $8.99. So they're going to start tiering it, and you have to pay different packages for the same product that you were getting for that one flat rate, now you have to purchase individual rates. So it makes it harder for the consumer to like get the same access because they have to pay more for what they want.
And it also, right? I mean, it gives those companies like AT&T a lot more power because all of a sudden they wield the ability for companies like Netflix or Hulu or whatever else, mm-hmm. right? Because they rely deep, they're going to rely deeply on that type of service.
And what happens if those particular companies have their own streaming services, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
What are the ways that they can use the speed to penalize those companies that are competition?
I mean, they already have Time Warner Cable has the ability to stream, right? And a lot of those companies do.
This is where it all came from. So a few years ago, because Verizon had its own streaming service with Go 90, they were slowing down streams with Netflix because they wanted people to use Go 90. Now the person in charge of bringing in Go 90, she's her name was Maggie something, Maddie something. She is actually resigning in January. Mm-hmm. So I remember when Go 90 first came out, working for Verizon, we had to pitch Go 90. Like, this was like, hey, talk to people, they get 3 months of free Go 90, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, whatever, what the fuck is Go 90? But no one wants it. Everyone uses Netflix and Hulu. So we had to try to push this product to people that people didn't want. Granted, it was free, but you could purchase different subscriptions of it. It failed horribly. She's now resigning because of it. And that was one of the things that they did was they slowed down the Netflix streams, and that's how they got caught. That's why this whole net neutrality thing came into to being in the
and
first place.
And it's considered by many scholars, especially legal scholars in particular, Lawrence Lessig, Robert McChesney, many others see this as fundamentally the First Amendment issue of our era. Mm-hmm. Because the internet, it's not just about internet speeds. It's about fundamentally democratic access. The internet works as a sort of radically democratic space. In a world, if we could take this to the public sphere, right? What's happening is that more and more public spaces are disappearing, right? Public spaces are run communally or by the government.
Yeah.
Right? The government are no longer owning those places. And what's happening is instead you have public seeming places, but they're owned by private corporations.
Yeah.
For those of you that live in Orange County, nowhere is this more evident than in the Spectrum.
Oh, the Irvine Spectrum.
The Irvine Spectrum looks like a public square. It's owned by a private corporation. What happens in this instance? What that does is it leaves the control and flow of people and speech in the hands of corporations who have no particular incentive to enshrine or protect those things. So as the public sphere is shrinking and shrinking, the internet acted as a way of countermeasuring that, as a counterbalance by going, okay, you may no longer have the free speech areas that you used to have,
mm-hmm.
town centers, town halls, etc. But you now have Facebook. You now have Reddit. You have all these kind of places. Now, the problem is that the internet, from its heyday to now, is also becoming corporatized.
Correct.
So look at the free speech places. What are they? Facebook,
Twitter.
Those are privately owned corporations
that act as public
spaces. So the internet is already moving in a corporatized fashion in the same way that the public sphere is. What happens when you remove any regulations from that and you say, oh, okay, well, free market will regulate itself. This will actually improve innovation because it'll incentivize things, etc. What the end result is that you now have corporations who'll do whatever it takes, even if it means curtailing free speech and democratic access, mm-hmm. so long as they pull in corporate profit. In the same way, we've seen them do it in the real world.
Uh-huh.
We've not in the digital world, but in the real world, we've seen corporations go, democratic access, not as important to us.
Correct.
But corporate shares, important to us.
Right.
So if you now allow that same mentality into the internet, what you're doing is you're taking that radically democratic space and you're erasing it. You're allowing corporations to go, we are going to slow things down. We are going to approve certain websites. We're going to approve, approve certain websites. We're going to increase the prices so that now, oh, sure, the market will somehow develop the rule, right? Because they're talking about the whole idea is that the market will somehow help innovate and expand in the rule because the rural areas are too slow, right? Uh-huh. But the reality of what happens is that when you don't have those regulations,
uh-huh.
those corporations, not only will they not expand in those rural areas, they'll hike up their prices so that you now have a class-based system of internet. So you have those people who have fast access, who have democratic access, and those that don't have access. We already see where the problem of that is. Our government. When you have Citizens United that says, oh, free speech, no regulation for corporations, what happens? You have two tiers of citizens in the United States. You have that citizen with money who has direct access to his politician, his state senator, his congressman, etc. Yeah. He donates money. His concerns are heard versus the individual who doesn't have the same access because they don't have money, right? They don't have capital. The very nature of capitalism is that it will always reinscribe classes, those that have wealth and therefore power, capital, and those that don't. Net neutrality isn't just about free speech. It's fundamentally about whether we're going to have a democratic space or we're going to reinscribe the very worst of capitalism. Do we really want the bourgeoisie in fucking the internet?
No.
Do you really want Comcast and Verizon, all the who already have access to your fucking state senators and your congressmen and your senators, all them, to also then regulate how fast you can access the internet, which information you can access? All of a sudden, independent blogging is going to disappear. You're going to find, or at least it's going to be super expensive in order to have that type of information. Open access journals from an academic perspective, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do to counterbalance the pay wall that you find in the academy, right, is we create open access journals that are easily accessible to people. Academic scholarship readily available for the public. Suddenly that's going to be behind a paywall. You're going to find that those things are going to get expensive, difficult to reach. You're going to find that those things are going to disappear because they can't support themselves anymore, or they're going to be put on a lower rung or lower tier internet lane.
But the thing is,
this is the issue.
But here's the thing. This isn't like a partisan issue. It's not like...
No, it isn't.
Like,
well, I mean, it sort of breaks along partisan lines. Republicans tend to, not all, but Republicans tend to favor Pai's proposals where Democrats don't. But it is more mixed than other issues are.
And it's like we see so much backlash from this that, like, I don't know why they're even trying to go with this. And here's the thing. Here's why I hate Pai so much, right? Because, like, Pai thought it would be really cute to do a mean tweets Ajit Pai edition, and he started reading off like tweets that people were sending about him, like, why do you hate America so much?
Well, the thing about Pai is, you got to understand, is he actually doesn't give two shits about people's opinion.
No.
Unlike senators and Republican and politicians who are technically, even if they're bought out by fucking corporations,
yeah,
they're still nervous about outrage, right? Yeah. Like if you get 10 calls to an office, they panic. They go, fuck.
Someone's paying attention.
How do I deal with this, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't, because there is no accountability in the FCC.
No.
So he doesn't give two shits.
Yeah, because he wasn't elected. Yeah. He was selected, right? But that's the thing. He just does not give a shit. And it's like, why? You're literally one of the most hated men in America right now.
Yeah.
He could not care less. And all he does, like, he literally was just sitting there tweeting about, skinny jeans and the word bay and acronyms. And I'm like, God, I fucking hate you. Your brown card is taken away, Ajit Pai. If you ever come around me and you try to order a kebab,
I
will slap it out your hand. He doesn't deserve to have any Middle Eastern food, no Indian food, no South Asian, no Asian food. You don't deserve anything, you son of a bitch.
He's a brown Republicans really are the worst, in my opinion. So that's, before we wrap up, I think that was a good debate on net neutrality. Not really a debate, more of a rant.
Yes.
But something that we should be paying attention to. These new proposals have already been put forth. If you're listening to this podcast, they're now going to be voted upon by the FCC. Chances are that they're going to go forward. This is going to be one of the darker moments of this administration. The damage that it does to what is fundamentally a technology that has shaped the public discourse is about to be come under assault. So pay attention to this. Watch this space. FCC and net neutrality, a big kind of First Amendment issue for our generation.
Go FCC especially for yourself.
All you fucking First Amendment patriots, right? If you're going to go hassle Berkeley, you should be hassling the FCC. I'm going to end with a story that I thought was particularly funny. So there is this statue in Australia, Blackfriars Priory School. So there was this statue of Saint Martin. Saint Martin is a very, very famous saint. Saint Martin de Porres, who helps out the poor. He's actually
patron saint of the poor?
He's not just the patron saint of the poor, but he's often seen in a lot of Latin American countries as a saint that works with the downtrodden, with people of color.
San Martin.
Saint Martin de Porres. So they unveiled this statue, this phenomenal sculpture of Saint Martin de Porres, in which he's handing a young boy a loaf of bread, which appears to have emerged from his cloak. Mm-hmm. Unintentionally,
Saint Martin's
statue. It had a unforeseen provocative design. That is to say, the loaf of bread seems to be appearing out of the crotch region of the saint. And the boy is ever so gingerly cupping the loaf of bread. Gingerly, very gingerly. It's very delicate.
It's like making sure there's no bumps.
Yeah. he's giving him a testicular exam. Oh. Did you see it? And
here, let me see it.
The internet naturally found the statue and, oh, no, you didn't.
It's oh, jeez.
Yeah. Now, given the Catholic Church's...
Adelaide, I was just there two days ago.
Given the Catholic Church's history here in regards to little boys.
No,
was a very unfortunately provocative statue. And so they've had to cover it up as they deal. It's cordoned off. It's covered up.
They put a burqa on it.
They put an entire burqa on this thing so that they could figure out. The pictures of this statue was actually shared by Shit Adelaide, which is an Instagram page that has more than 1,500 likes. But it was... It's probably one of my more interesting statues, I should say. One Instagram user wrote, like, who the hell designed, approved, and erected it, and no one thought about
erect,
it.
Erect, that's a
good one. Now, I enjoyed the fact that they used erect in that in that sentence. That was very good. And another one wrote, this cannot be real. I can't believe this happened.
the statue was designed in Vietnam, apparently.
I personally think that it is... the best statue I've ever seen in recent years, and it perfectly captures
our imitating life.
The fucked upness of 2017. If you don't know what I'm talking about, please look up St. Martin's statue at Blackfriars. And on that note, we're going to have Diz take us out.
Yes. If you want to get a hold of us on Facebook, you can. Facebook.com/currentlynerdy. We're on the tweets at Currently Nerdy, on Twitter at Currently Nerdy, Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. We're on YouTube. We're kind of slacking on YouTube. We'll be putting out a video soon. Just search Currently Nerdy on YouTube and you'll find us there. If you want to get a hold of us. No, sorry. Before we get a hold of us individually. It's been a while. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. We're on all three. Please rate, review, and subscribe. If you haven't, do so. And if you have, make your friends review us and subscribe to us. Because we're lovely guys and people should hear more about us.
I don't know about that.
Well, two out of three of us are lovely guys.
By two out of three, I'm me and V.
No, I was going to say you and I. V's not very lovely.
He's mean.
He's just mean. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of your not-so-lovely ass?
Oh, I'm gonna fuck you up after the end of this.
I told you he's not lovely.
It's going to be beautiful.
Way to reaffirm his prejudices.
You can find me on my website at thesavageslayer.com. You can also find me on my Instagram or Twitter at vytran214. That's V-Y-T-R-A-N 214. Elite.
You can catch me on Instagram at A-A-O-L-O-M-I. Same for Twitter. If you're interested in my political ramblings, check out Twitter. If you're interested in behind the scenes of me as a historian, Instagram for sure. You can find me on my website, aliolomi.com, A-L-I-O-L-O-M-I.com. And of course, on our sister podcast, Head On History, where you guys have been very kind with all your wonderful reviews. Diz.
You can find me on Tinder, on OkCupid, on Bumble. What is the other one? The Happen? I don't know. I'm on all of those.
Coffee Meet Bagel?
Yeah, Coffee Meet Bagel. But more importantly, you can actually reach out to me at Dizbulla, D-I-Z-B-U-L-L-A-H.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you, unless you're against the big bottle brand. Man, we hate you.